Well, I am 67 years old today, January 10th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time right now is 18:50 hours Eastern Standard Time. I was born at, I believe, 6 in the morning on a Thursday in 1957, and today's study is about the Pharaoh who was drowned, but we're also going to talk about a little bit about technology. I think we want to keep in mind, I just have a short statement to make, maybe we'll talk at the end if we have more time. Technology is going to be popularized in the marketplace. It's going to become popular only based on what the average person thinks. That's how things become popular. It's not based on what the smartest technology is, so that's something to remember. If possible, try and remember it. I mean, I think it's good to but we can't predict how the average person thinks either. That's the other problem. So we don't know what technology is going to be the popular one in the future, so it's very risky making any decisions about buying something, even maybe anything right now, at the rate at which technology is advancing. So today's study in the C-Cubed article, chapter 4, paragraph 7. Now, supposing that someone tells you that the story of how Israel left Egypt, which is known as the Exodus, couldn't really have happened because it says that Pharaoh was drowned and that his body was lost, whereas the pharaohs have mummy bodies. In other words, you know, the mummies prove that they weren't lost. What pharaoh is there, they ask you, whose body is missing from the list, which is the one for whom we have no mummy? They can't win an argument with that approach now, because there is actually a mummy missing. That is that of Thutmose the First. And for a while they thought they found the body, the mummy of Thutmose the First, but later they changed their mind and said, no, it's not him. Below we see the mummies of the pharaohs from Thutmose the First on in this illustration here. If we shrink it down, we see that these are the mummies from Thutmose the First, Amenhotep the First. Thutmose is missing, the first, Thutmose the First. Thutmose the Second, they think they found him. Hatshepsut, Thutmose the Third. Amenhotep the Second, Thutmose the Fourth. Amenhotep the Third. Now, Akhenaten wasn't found, as we mentioned already. That's the skull we believe belonging to this, the father of Tut, but possibly and probably Smenkhkari, and then Tut is the other mummy. So we have, but the thing is, Akhenaten is not believed to have been the pharaoh of the Exodus. So all we have of the missing two are Thutmose the First, who fits perfectly as the pharaoh of the Exodus, according to the facts and according to the genealogy, the chronology. So that's the end of this study for today. There is a missing mummy. That's. I mean, when I first realized this, I was just ecstatic because. But and then I still had to have many other. Just because you don't find the mummy doesn't prove anything, right? Lack of evidence is not proof of lack, right? You don't. But it, just because there's no mummy wouldn't prove he was the pharaoh of the Exodus. But if he is the pharaoh of the Exodus, there shouldn't be a mummy, especially since his daughter, Hatshepsut, I think she was also married to Thutmose II, was she not? I believe so, yeah. But she was the queen shortly after Thutmose I, because Thutmose II didn't rule long, only for 3 years. But Thutmose I was the father of Hatshepsut, and she dedicated a coffin to her father, Thutmose I, which implies, since, you know, he'd long been deceased for some years, certainly many months, right? He'd been deceased and some years before she dedicated a coffin. That shows that that's completely consistent with the fact that the body never was found, which, again, is completely evidence, completely strong evidence, completely maybe proven, you could say, but it's completely consistent with Thutmose I as the pharaoh of the Exodus, which is thrilling to know who the pharaoh was. It's just, and to me, it's thrilling because I searched for probably all my life to know what the Bible was really saying and what, you know, I mean, when did these things happen was a kind of a later question that I developed or that I realized that we didn't have the accurate information about. But, I mean, I always wondered, come on, there must be more to the Bible than this, right? When you see the Bible. But anyway, little children, Proverbs chapter 9, verse 6 is today's proverb. Leave the inexperienced ones. Leave the inexperienced ones and keep living. And walk straight in the way of understanding. Very important. Inexperienced people will try anything, right? I mean, nobody's exempt from this. If we're inexperienced, we might try any drug or any food or anything that we don't know about just to find out what it does and see if we can learn something and about how to benefit ourselves and so on. But the more you know about things, the more you realize that actually you want to eliminate a lot of paths. You don't want to follow every possible path, because that's too complex. And it's the same with shopping for new technology. If you can eliminate 90% of what you're looking at right off the bat, because you're not going to look at something that's, for example, not environmentally friendly, you don't want to look at that. That's one thing. Oh, I could talk for hours about this, so I better not get started. But it's very true that experience might teach you not what you think it teaches you. Experience teaches you to simplify, quite different from what you might have imagined it would teach you. 1 Kings 16. The word of Jehovah now came to Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha, saying, now Baasha was the king of Israel, and let's see what we have. In the third year of King Asa, Baasha became king over Israel in Tirzah for 24 years. Asa was the king of Judah, and that was verse 33 of 1 Kings 15. So Jehu, the son of Hanani, against Baasha said from Jehovah, he said, inasmuch as I raised you up out of the dust that I might constitute you leader over my people Israel, Baasha did, he was raised up, but you went walking in the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, right, who split off the kingdom in the first place, and so caused my people Israel to sin, Baasha did, by offending me with their sins. Here I am making a clean sweep after Baasha and after his house, and I shall certainly constitute his house like the house of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. Anyone of Baasha that is dying in the city, the dogs will eat. And anyone of his that is dying in the field, the fowls of the heavens will eat. As for the rest of the affairs of Baasha, and what he did, and his mightiness, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? Finally, Baasha lay down with his forefathers and was buried in Tirzah. This is before the capital of Israel was Samaria. And Elah, his son, began to reign in place of him. And also, by means of Jehu, the son of Hanani, the prophet, Jehovah's word itself had come against Baasha and his house, both because of all the badness that he committed in the eyes of Jehovah by offending him with the work of his hands, that it might become like the house of Jeroboam, and because he struck him down, that is, Baasha struck Jeroboam's house down, or Nadab, the son of Jeroboam, in the footnote. was struck down by Baasha to prevent Jeroboam's house from having a claim upon the kingship. Verse 8, in the 26th year now, after Baasha died, in the 26th year of Asa, the king of Judah, Elah, the son of Baasha, became king over Israel in Tirzah for 2 years. So the kingship was always inherited by the son, generally, unless somebody intervened. And his servant, Elah's servant, Zimri, the chief of half the chariots, began to conspire against him while he was in Tirzah, drinking himself drunk at the house of Arza, who was over the household in Tirzah. And Zimri proceeded to come in and strike him down and put him to death in the 27th year of Asa, the king of Judah. Interesting, in the 26th year, Elah became king. In the 27th year, he was no longer king, and yet he reigned for 2 years. So we always have this accounting error or accounting difficulty, especially with the Israelite kings. It seems to be an issue. Maybe they counted their years inclusively or something. It's hard to say exactly what was going on with them. And he began to reign in place of him, this man called Zimri. And it came about that when he began to reign, as soon as he sat down upon his throne, he struck down all the house of Baasha. He did not let anyone of his remain that urinates against the wall, the males, that is, or his avengers of blood. In other words, the ones who would have come back to seek vengeance against Zimri, he struck them down. Or his friends, he struck them down. Thus Zimri annihilated the whole house of Baasha, according to the word of Jehovah that he had spoken against Baasha, by means of Jehu the prophet, on account of all the sins of Baasha and the sins of Elah his son, with which they sinned and with which they caused Israel to sin by offending Jehovah the God of Israel with all, or with their vain idols. As for the rest of the affairs of Elah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? In the 27th year of Asa, the king of Judah, we said 958 was roughly his year one in the Julian calendar of dating. 958 minus 27 is 931, so maybe 932 even, or maybe somewhere in that range. It appears, if I did the calculation right, 931 would be approximately year one of Zimri. But let's take a look at what our article said. If we can go there, where was it? It's somewhere over here. Moses part one, Moses part two, right here. This might be it. Okay, we need to zoom in a bit. There we go. We're getting close. There it is. Baasha. We have the kings of Israel, Baasha, Elah. Zimri ruled 931 is the date I gave it in the article Moses Part 2. That was for his rulership of 7 days in the year 931 BCE, as I dated it at that time when I wrote the article Moses. So approximately BCE 931 was when Zimri ruled. He became king for 7 days in Tirzah, in verse 15 there, while the people were encamping against Gibbethon, which belonged to the Philistines. In time the people that were encamped heard it said, Zimri has conspired and also struck down the king. So all Israel made Omri, the chief of the army, king over Israel on that day in the camp. They didn't accept Zimri. He was a murderer. Omri and all Israel with him now went on up from Gibbethon and began to lay siege to Tirzah. And it came about that as soon as Zimri saw that the city had been captured, he then came into the dwelling tower of the king's house and burned the king's house over himself with fire, so that he died for the sins of his with which he had sinned by doing what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah, by walking in the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin which he did by causing Israel to sin. He committed suicide. as for the rest of the affairs of Zimri and his conspiracy with which he conspired, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? It was then that the people of Israel began to divide themselves into two parts. There was one part of the people that became followers of Tibni, the son of Ginath, to make him king, and the other part, followers of Omri. Finally, the people that were following Omri overcame the people that were following Tibni, the son of Ginath, so that Tibni met death, and Omri began to reign. In the 31st year of Asa, the king of Judah, Omri became king over Israel for 12 years. 31st year. Well, that's interesting, because it was the 27th year, we said. Yeah, it was the 27th year when Zimri became king for 7 days. And now it's the 31st year of Asa, the king of Judah, when Omri became king over Israel for 12 years. What did we say in our article? Sounds like there's a problem chronologically here. What do we say in the article, Moses? For 12 years from the 31st year. Well, here we have 11 years from the 27th year, actually, is what we've accounted it. Right? Or 12 years inclusive for Omri. So we didn't account it as from the 31st year. But that's because somebody had to be considered as ruling for those years in between. But I'm not sure what. In Tirzah, he reigned 6 years. It says. That's interesting. And he proceeded to buy the mountain of Samaria from Shemer for 2 talents of silver and began to build on the mountain and call the name of the city that he built by the name of Shemer, the master of the mountain Samaria. Well, we know from the... we're not too concerned about any problem with the chronology because the years of King Ahab are correlated to the years of the king of Judah, Jehoshaphat, and so on. There are correlations between the two kingdoms that enable us to verify what the dates are. So it's not, even if there seems to be a confusing number there, the 31st year of Asa, we don't worry about it too much. And Omri kept doing what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah. That's not something to be oblivious to, and came to do worse than all who were prior to him. We don't want to ignore the fact that Omri was doing bad, and he went walking in all the way of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, and in his sin with which he caused Israel to sin by offending Jehovah the God of Israel with their vain idols. As for the rest of the affairs of Omri, what he did and his mightiness with which he acted, are they not written in the book of the affairs of the days of the kings of Israel? Finally, Omri lay down with his forefathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab his son began to reign in place of him. See, we know an idol is nothing. I mean, these vain idols are just the statues or creations of man made out of gold or silver or whatever, or even out of wood, and they're worshipped. But we know they mean nothing if we're worshippers of the truth. We know these idols mean nothing. So why is Jehovah so concerned about people worshipping these idols? Why would he worry about it? One might think that. But, you know, we know Jehovah's jealous. He wants people to rule to worship only him. He wants to be the sovereign Lord, the ruler, and the one who alone is the one worshipped by his people, and he wants his people. That's why he has his people, for the purpose of serving him and worshiping correctly. But why would he worry about these false issues, right? It's the same. It's very analogous, I think, to the idea of, you know, all the different products we could buy today on the market. How do we narrow it down? It's very important to narrow down, or else we just get lost and we end up, perhaps, there's nothing left except to choose based on our momentary desire. And that's a very bad choice, in many cases, to base things on our momentary desires. This is the reason, perhaps, but we don't really know Jehovah's reason, but that this is man's potential way of understanding it, is that Jehovah likes things to be correctly done and, you know, properly narrowed down in the proper way. Finally, Omri lay down with his forefathers and was buried in Samaria, and Ahab his son began to reign in place of him. And Ahab is the one, the first king of Israel, about whom we really know much, or about whom we really have heard. And as for Ahab the son of Omri, he became king over Israel in the 38th year of Asa. Aha! So we can go back from the 38th to the 27th with the 12 years of Omri. So this 31st year is an anomalous number. We don't understand why it's there. Maybe he wasn't officially made king in until the 31st year. We don't know, right? Oh, upon the death of his rival. Oh, the death of his rival. Okay, in the footnote. So his rival didn't die until some 4 years after the conflict began. That would explain that. So everything is fitting together nicely now. And in the 38th year, which is 11 years or 12 years inclusive, after after Zimri was killed and was succeeded by Omri, which is his reign of 12 years, it fits perfectly, from 27 to 38 is 12 inclusive. And Ahab the son of Omri continued to reign as he became king in the 38th year of Asa. He continued over Israel in Samaria 22 years. We date his reign as from 920 to 899, or something like that. There it is, 920 to 899, right there. That's Ahab. And again, it's inclusive. Only among the kings of Israel is there this bizarre accounting of the reign's years for the kings that's somewhat different. And it changes after a while. They start to become normalized after a few kings after Ahab. And Ahab, the son of Omri, proceeded to do worse in the eyes of Jehovah than all those who were prior to him during those 22 years. And it came about that as if it were the most trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, he now took as wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, the king of the Sidonians, and began to go and serve Baal and to bow down to him. And this has some documentation. We can find some evidence of the wife of Ahab among the kings of Tyre, for example. The king of Tyre can be identified. And he's maybe also the king of the Sidonians as well. But we've identified these people historically. Jezebel is, and her father anyway, is identifiable. I believe that's something that is fairly well established in documentary evidence. We have some amazing evidence that helps us confirm the historicity of the Bible, and therefore the kings of Judah also. And Ahab began to go and serve Baal, this false god, Baal, and to bow down to him. Baal means Lord, I believe. And he's a false god. Further, he set up an altar to Baal at the house of Baal. Ahab set up an altar of false worship that he built at the house of Baal that he built in Samaria. And Ahab went on to make the sacred pole, another thing that's not permitted in the true worship. And Ahab came to do more to offend Jehovah, the God of Israel, than all the kings of Israel that happened to be prior to him. In his days, Hiel the Bethelite built Jericho. Listen to this. This is the fulfillment of the prophecy that we had from Joshua. In his book, at the forefoot of Biram, it says, his firstborn, Hiel, the Bethelite, laid the foundation of Jericho, and at the forefoot of Segub, his youngest, he put up its doors. According to Jehovah's word that he spoke by means of Joshua, the son of Nun, in prophecy. It's from 1 Kings 16:34. That's the end of the book. The chapter of 1 Kings 6, chapter 16 of 1 Kings. Joshua 6:26 was where this prophecy of Joshua was spoken. And it was exactly as it was spoken that it was fulfilled. Now we go to Ezekiel. We need to move quickly now. Ezekiel 17 or 18, which is 18. It's a fairly long one, and then we have a short one in Revelation. We've got to move, though. And the word of Jehovah continued to occur to me, saying, what does it mean to you people? Ezekiel writes that you are expressing this proverbial saying on the soil of Israel, saying, fathers are the ones that eat unripe grapes, but it is the teeth of the sons that get set on edge. As I am alive, as the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah, it will no more continue to be yours to express this proverbial saying in Israel. Look, all the souls, to me they belong, as the soul of the father, so likewise the soul of the son, to me they belong. The soul that is sinning, it itself will die. And as regards a man, in case he happens to be righteous, and he has executed justice and righteousness on the mountains, he did not eat. If on the mountains he did not eat, for example, and his eyes he did not raise to the dungy idols of the house of Israel, and his companion's wife he did not defile, and to a woman in her impurity he would not go near, and no man would he maltreat, the pledge that he took for indebtedness he would return, nothing would he wrest away in robbery, to the hungry one he would give his own bread, and the naked one he would cover with a garment, nothing would he give on interest, and no usury would he take. From injustice he would draw back his hand, true justice he would execute between man and man. In my statutes he kept walking, and my judicial decisions he kept in order to execute truth. He is righteous. He will positively keep living, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. And if one who has become father to a son who is a robber, a shedder of blood, who has done the like of one of these things, but he himself has done none of these very things, his son did them, in case he has eaten also upon the mountains, and his companion's wife he has defiled, the afflicted and poor one he has maltreated, things he has wrested away in robbery, a pledged thing he would not return, and to the dungy idols he lifted up his eyes. A detestable thing is what he has done, on usury he has given, and interest he has taken, and he positively will not keep living. If he does all those things, all these detestable things he has done, he will positively be put to death. On him his own blood will come to be. And look, one has become father to a son who keeps seeing all the sins of his father that he has done. And he sees and does not do things like them. On the mountains he has not eaten, and his eyes he has not lifted up to the dungy idols of the house of Israel. His companion's wife he has not defiled, and no man has he maltreated, no pledge has he seized, and nothing has he taken in robbery. To the hungry one he has given his own bread, and the naked one he has covered with a garment. From the afflicted one he has drawn back his hand. No usury and interest has he taken. My judicial decisions he has carried out. In my statutes he has walked. He himself will not die because of the error of his father. He will positively keep living. As for his father, because he committed outright defrauding, wrested something away in robbery of a brother, and whatever is not good he has done in the midst of his peoples, look, then he must die for his error. And you people will certainly say, why is it that the son does not have to bear anything because of the error of the father? Now, as regards the son, justice and righteousness he has executed. All the statutes of mine he has kept, and he keeps doing them. He will positively keep living. The soul that is sinning, it itself will die. A son himself will bear nothing because of the error of the father, and a father himself will bear nothing because of the error of the son. Upon his own self, the very righteousness of the righteous one will come to be, and upon his own self, the very wickedness of a wicked one will come to be. Now, as regards someone wicked, in case he should turn back from all his sins that he has committed, and he should actually keep all my statutes and execute justice and righteousness, he will positively keep living. He will not die. all his transgressions that he has committed, they will not be remembered against him. For his righteousness that he has done, he will keep living. Do I take any delight at all in the death of someone wicked, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah, and not in that he should turn back from his ways and actually keep living? Now, when someone righteous turns back from his righteousness and actually does injustice, according to all the detestable things that the wicked one has done, he keeps doing and he is living, none of all his righteous acts that he has done will be remembered for his unfaithfulness that he has committed and for his sin with which he has sinned. For them he will die. And you people will certainly say the way of Jehovah is not adjusted right. Hear, please, O house of Israel, is not my own way adjusted right? Are not the ways of you people not adjusted right? When someone righteous turns back from his righteousness and he actually does injustice and dies on account of them for his injustice that he has done, he will die. And when someone wicked turns back from his wickedness that he has committed and proceeds to execute justice and righteousness, he is the one that will preserve his own soul alive. When he sees and turns back from all his transgressions that he has done, he will positively keep living. He will not die. And the house of Israel will certainly say, the way of Jehovah is not adjusted right. As for my ways, are they not adjusted right, O house of Israel? Are not the ways of you people the ones that are not adjusted right? Therefore, each one according to his ways is how I shall judge you, O house of Israel, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. Turn back. Yes, cause a turning back from all your transgressions, and let nothing prove to be for you people a stumbling block, causing error. Throw off from yourselves all your transgressions in which you have transgressed, and make for yourselves a new heart and a new spirit. For why should you die, O house of Israel? For I do not take any delight in the death of someone dying, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah. So cause a turning back and keep living, O you people. It's the end of Ezekiel chapter 18. A very, very important, a very often cited chapter of Ezekiel, often quoted, that chapter of Ezekiel is. Revelation chapter 10, little children, and I saw another strong angel, John writes, descending from heaven, arrayed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as the sun, and his feet were as fiery pillars, and he had in his hand a little scroll opened. And he set his right foot upon the sea, but his left one upon the earth. And he cried out with a loud voice, just as when a lion roars. And when he cried out, the seven thunders uttered their own voices. Oh, we're out of time. Now, when the seven thunders spoke, I was at the point of writing, but I heard a voice out of heaven say, seal up the things the seven thunders spoke. So you can read the end of that if you want to. That's all for today's study. We'll try to squeeze it in another day, maybe. January 10th, 2024 of the Common Era, 1923 hours, Eastern Standard Time. 1923, the year when, remarkably, Joseph became ruler in the BCE years over Egypt. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. On my behalf, this is Gully, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.